Collins News and Comment. It's Monday, April 6, 2020. Our con man in chief hogs the podium. He exacts revenge. He slams the media. And he promotes snake oil along with Blue Sky. Let's try to digest all of the developments since I last spoke to you on Friday. On Friday afternoon, as I was recording the podcast, Trump was presiding over one of his sideshows. And he, monotonously read a statement that had been drafted for him, saying that he recommends that we wear cloth face masks, not the surgical ones, we've got to save those for the frontline medical pros, but some sort of a face cloth to prevent us from exposing other people to what comes out of our mouths and noses, sneezes, coughs, spitting, even unintentional, you know, the kind of launch of spittle that happens when many people speak. And he immediately undermined his own statement by saying he won't be wearing one. Because, gosh, he couldn't be seen doing that when he meets with presidents and prime ministers and, oh, maybe even dictators. And when you look at that, you see just how uncommitted he is to trying to use the period of time when this nation is essentially shut down to not minimize the risk, but to mitigate the risk of spread to more Americans as the death toll counts. That evening, in the dark of night, he issued an order firing the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community, who he blames for the whistleblower, the exposure of his phone call with the Ukrainian President, Zelensky, the ensuing impeachment. And all of these people are just terrible, and they have got to go. So he gave this guy 30 days' notice, little better than Captain Crozier, who was sacked 3 days after his letter calling for help to defend his crew members on the USS Roosevelt went public. So Atkinson, who by every account is a straight-up guy, he plays the insider game, he investigates, he writes reports, and he knows nothing will ever happen to most of those reports that he writes. He's gone public, and in, I guess, a manner that is stronger than most of the people who have incurred the president's wrath and revenge, he went public. He said he's disappointed and saddened. He said, please do not allow recent events to silence your voices. And some of my comments today are colored by the fact that as I had lunch in the middle of the afternoon on Saturday, we flipped on one of these revolting displays of con man Trump. And he alternates between, you know, giving the advice that's on his cue cards, allowing Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx and occasionally others, including the vice president, to speak. He alternates that with his attacks on the media, his promotion, the snake oil peddling of hydroxychloroquine, we'll get into detail about that in a moment, with specious attacks on the media for nasty questions. And the word terrible comes up a lot because of his limited vocabulary. He said Atkinson, quote, I thought he did a terrible job, absolutely terrible. That man is a disgrace to IGs. He did what he's supposed to do. Now, I have objected to the whistleblower, the insider whistleblower from the intelligence community, most likely the CIA, as the basis for the initial investigation. But that aside, I believe that as compared with the Russiagate investigation, the Ukrainegate investigation, was based on public testimony, under oath, on some documents, but many, of course, were stonewalled by the White House along with a parade of critical witnesses. And so my evaluation is that Atkinson did what he's expected to do. In his statement, he said he had scrupulously abided by the law. He was under two clear obligations to pass on information from whistleblowers involving classified information to the congressional intelligence committees and to safeguard the identity of the whistleblower as a guard against reprisals. Quote, I have spent my entire 17-year career as a public servant acting without regard to partisan favor or political fear. And he talked about Trump's efforts to tweet. Even as witnesses were testifying before the so-called impeachment inquiry, the Intelligence Committee, and then the impeachment process itself at the Judiciary Committee. I mean, we have never seen this kind of presidential interference and sniping. And, of course, he maintains that it's just a witch hunt, and he's obligated to punch these people in the nose. And even at the briefing on Saturday, he's a fake whistleblower, he says of Atkinson, and frankly, someone ought to sue his ass off. And Atkinson countered, those of us who vow to protect a whistleblower's right to safely be heard must, to the end, do what we promise to do, no matter how difficult and no matter the personal consequences. Then there is Captain Crozier. Brett Crozier is the man who was commander until Thursday of the USS Roosevelt. And to date, 153 of his crew members have tested positive and been offshored to Guam for quarantine and treatment. And to add to the insult of his being relieved of command, Brett Crozier tested positive for the coronavirus and got his results either before or after he left his ship. Of course, under duress. And these people, of course, are used to set an example for others who cross the line, who embarrass the president, who don't use appropriate channels. And, of course, when they do use appropriate channels, they are ignored. And what was so bizarre watching this briefing on Saturday, Trump, I thought it was terrible what he did to write a letter. This is a captain of a massive ship that's nuclear-powered. He shouldn't be talking that way in a letter. And he went on to say it was 5 pages long. Now, we know of his limited attention span and his one-page memo requirements. But that's not a firing offense. I'm sure Trump could have had somebody summarize it for him. Now, I haven't seen publication of the full letter, just elements quoted from it. But this is so bizarre and reckless. And the people who watch Fox and the One America News Channel and other right-wing media outlets, they blame people like me for my hateful criticism of their president. And they call for unity. And unity means we sit down and shut up and just let this loose cannon roam around the deck. And he had the temerity to say that the letter from Captain Crozier was all over the place, as he demonstrated in nearly a two-hour ramble, that he's all over the damn place. Takes one to know one, right, Donnie? Now, currently, coming back to the Inspector General, there are more than a dozen positions in the IG chain that are unfilled. And after the signing statement from the so-called CARES Act, the $2.2 trillion bailout bill that included a requirement of an Inspector General, Trump said first that he wouldn't allow Congress to tell him what to do, and then he appointed one of his loyalists, some guy we've never heard of named Brian D. Miller, as the Special Inspector General. to monitor how Steve Mnuchin parcels out the bounty of government funding to his good buddies. Oh, and we'll get to the vultures here, who are circling with other corporate opportunists in just a short while. Now, there's one Republican who's spoken up and in veiled comments criticized the president for the briefings and in particular for contradicting the experts who appear on the same podium with him. It's as if he doesn't hear them or he thinks we don't hear them. So this comes from the Republican senator from West Virginia, Shelley Moore Capito. I think he probably would be better served, and maybe others would, when it's not used as the press conference for everything else. I think he should leave, let the health professionals guide where we're going to go, Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx. And so sometimes I think it goes off the rails a little bit, but you know, that's the way the president conducts business. Isn't that sweet? Always the exception and the rationalization for this man's criminally negligent behavior. Self-indulgent, narcissistic, vengeful. The only time we've seen him express any compassion is when he reported, it was last week sometime, that an unnamed friend of his was stricken with coronavirus and not doing well. So, to continue his criticism, Trump was on the Twitter today, noting that advertising has fallen off during the pandemic, particularly at the New York Times and the Washington Post. I can't say whether this is because they are fake news sources of information to a level that few can understand, or the virus is just plain beating them up. Fake news is bad for America. Now, you know I have my criticism of the media, particularly in the Russiagate context. But he's the one who's promoting all the fake news these days, the blue sky, the miracle cure. He said that this coming week we're not going to have deaths, we're going to have a lot of death. Not people. No, just death. And his deflection, at the same time as he tries to act like a strong leader, a wartime leader, he says, just packaging himself for re-election in November. It's so insulting. And there was a tit-for-tat tweet between Trump and Joe Biden after Biden announced that he thinks it's possible that the Democratic National Convention will have to be held virtually to avoid putting thousands of people at risk if they convene in Milwaukee in August. So Trump digs, such a convention would be one where Biden doesn't have to show up. Gee, I wonder why, he says. Now, there are many of us who are critical of Biden who may ask the same question. But it's because we don't see Biden as a strong candidate. And that this will lead the Democrats to defeat and a four-year extension of the Trump madness. So central to Saturday, and according to other reports, because I couldn't watch again on Sunday, Trump repeatedly promoted the use of hydroxychloroquine used for malaria, rheumatoid arthritis, and lupus. And he keeps saying that the drug is being tested, there are powerful signs of its potential. Then he equivocates, but what do I know? I'm not a doctor. And then he encourages people to take the drug. Just like one of those TV ads. Ask your doctor. And the side effects include that your feet might fall off and your brain may stop. He goes on, if it does work, it would be a shame we didn't do it early. He says the government has stockpiled 29 million pills of the drug. That's Jared's stockpile, you know. It doesn't belong to the states. We're sending them to labs, our military. We're sending them to hospitals, he said. And then this part I witnessed, what do you have to lose, he said. And he intimated that being intubated, connected to a ventilator, is essentially a death sentence. And so he's just saying, hey, take this drug and see what happens. And on Sunday, it got really conflicted. First, let me back up. Saturday afternoon before his briefing performance, There was a Situation Room meeting where a fight broke out verbally between Dr. Fauci and Peter Navarro, who's a so-called expert on trade and economics. And he passed around a bunch of folders, and I don't know what was in them. But he claimed that this was the evidence that hydroxychloroquine worked in China, and Dr. Fauci has repeatedly said that that is not a controlled study, it's not scientific, and that the side effects are dangerous and fatal to certain people who may not know conditions they have that would lead a round of this drug to kill them. It causes psychiatric symptoms, cardiac problems, cardiac arrest. But Trump doesn't care. And so he's saying, what are we waiting for? Gee, let's take a couple of years and test it out. Let's go out and test with the test tubes in the laboratories. I'd love to do that, but we have people dying today. With no awareness that his delays, his downplaying of this, has led to spread of the virus and the very deaths that he refers to. And so this is really dangerous. He is unhinged. His crown prince, Jared Kushner, is promoting this drug, along with Navarro, along with Rudy Giuliani. And I haven't run this part down, but I'll mention it just for your speculation, too. Michael Cohen, who preceded Rudy Giuliani as Trump's consigliere, he got payments right after the election, millions of dollars from Novartis, which is one of the companies that produces prescription drugs based on hydroxychloroquine. Now, what I don't know is if Rudy is on the Novartis payroll right now or had business connections with them in the past. But I wouldn't be surprised. And, of course, the hoarding of these drugs leads to shortages and complications for people with lupus or rheumatoid arthritis who are currently taking them. And I presume that they have been tested for potential damage from the side effects that we've cited. And so there's a lot of good argument to go slow with this drug when you have people who are near death and who consent to compassionate use. I don't particularly object. That's when you're at the stage of what do you got to lose. And Media Matters did a little recap of Fox News coverage between March 23rd and 25th. Over 100 times, Fox News presenters and their guests promoted the use of hydroxychloroquine. And when he was finally pressed on Sunday and muzzled Dr. Fauci, Fauci was asked a question. He went to the podium, and Trump interrupted and said, he's already been asked that question 15 times. He said, you, talking to the reporter, should be thanking them for what they've done, not always asking wise guy questions. And that's when he ended the briefing and stormed out of the press room. Now, I've linked to more information about actual scientists commenting on the risk of hydroxychloroquine, written by Robert Mackey at The Intercept, and I think it's worth your read. Meanwhile, one of the other people who has publicly been cavalier and in denial about the impact, the risk of exposure to coronavirus, is one Boris Johnson, the guy who can't even comb his hair. He was admitted to hospital Sunday morning. Queen Elizabeth gave a speech trying to buck up the British people. It's only the fourth time, other than her Christmas message each year, that she has addressed the British public. That's in 62 years. And today we've learned that Boris Johnson has been moved to intensive care. Now, I don't wish him death from coronavirus, but I hope we can start to see how idiots have been presiding over this pandemic response. And the waffling Democratic governor of Wisconsin, who had been in lockstep with his Republican legislature and saying, no, let's have the primary election on Tuesday, April 7th. Well, today he finally signed an executive order postponing it until June 9th. And his excuse was, oh gosh, we're not going to be able to hold municipal elections, and that's going to leave a gap in state government. But this is as facile and idiotic as the claim of Georgia Governor Brian Kemp that it wasn't until last week that he learned that the coronavirus could be transmitted by people who were asymptomatic. Everybody's known that for months. But it just reached Brian Kemp. I think he used up all his brain power rigging the election that defeated Stacey Abrams last year. And a federal judge in Oklahoma has granted a temporary restraining order against the state's ban on abortion during the coronavirus pandemic. It comes with some stipulations. He's basically saying that because Oklahoma has an unconstitutional 20-week limit on abortion, that any woman who would hit the 20-week limit between now and the scheduled end of the ban in late April, April 30th, should be permitted to access abortion. He also lifted the ridiculous, irrational ban on medical abortions using pharmaceutical products. And get this, when the Crown Prince, Jared Kushner, appeared at last Thursday's press briefing reality show, he made claims about the national stockpile. He made claims that he thought governors were asking for too much, trying to hoard equipment and supplies. He was substituting his judgment for theirs, which is deeply offensive. But he went on to say that the strategic national stockpile was not meant for the use of the states. Quote, the notion of the federal stockpile was it's supposed to be our stockpile. It's not supposed to be the state stockpiles that they then use. Well, that's flat-out bullshit. And they raced to correct or to scrub the website at the Department of Health and Human Services to comport with Kushner's bullshit. And BuzzFeed has a good report today with side-by-side screenshots of the website before and after it was changed. And the new language describes the stockpile as a way to supplement state and local supplies during public health emergencies. And even the Republican senator from Colorado, Cory Gardner, do I have his quote here? Yeah. Friday pushed for an investigation of the stockpile, telling Politico, any kind of mismanagement or abuse needs to be rooted out and those responsible held accountable. I don't know what Kushner's talking about, what he meant, but the stockpile is for the country, and the country is made up of states in the federal government. Well, that's lucid for a change. Now to today's COVID-19 news summary, compiled by Linda Lewis, and I'm very grateful for her help on this. The worldwide count is 1.3 million confirmed cases, 72,000 deaths, and 273,000 recovered. In the U.S., 347,000 confirmed cases, 10,335 deaths, and about 19,000 recovered. And we know that because of the slow rollout of testing, particularly here in California, we learned over the weekend, out of 40 million people, only 126,000 have received test results so far. And Governor Newsom, to his credit, says he owns that and he's going to work rapidly to fix it. So the guidance announced on Friday that Trump immediately undermined was that a significant portion of individuals with coronavirus lack symptoms and that even those who eventually develop them can transmit the virus to others before showing symptoms. The CDC now recommends wearing cloth face coverings in public settings. And they don't want us to make a run on surgical masks or the N95 respirators. Because, hey, cronies of theirs are busy shipping them offshore to maximize their profiteering. The forecast from Dr. Birx is that Pennsylvania, Colorado, and the District of Columbia are likely the next big hotspots for this virus. Now, at the Saturday conference, news conference, press conference, reality, you know, whatever you want to call it, he defended the use of the Defense Production Act, and he's all over the place because he's gunning for 3M, which already has contracts to supply entities in other countries with face masks and similar supplies. And he talked about how he used it to retaliate against 3M. But I believe part of the retaliation is that other countries have seen supplies that they ordered and paid for hijacked by American operatives. We don't know if they're government operatives or just corporate goons. But we've covered that in some detail last week. And it still alarms me that many mainstream media outlets have not provided their consumers of news with the full story. And we're seeing European nations ban exports. And I think this is payback for our thuggery and also just for the poison that Trump has injected into NATO and into tariffs imposed on exports to the United States from Europe. Now, India has banned exports of hydroxychloroquine. And the way that Trump has ignored the clear side effects and promoted this as some miracle cure is one of the most indefensible, reprehensible things that this derelict leader has done so far. And let's see what's else in what else is in Linda's report. New York City overwhelmed with cadavers. And I'm sorry if one of those dead people is a relative or friend of yours. They're going to temporarily dig trenches in city parks, line them up 10 in a row, and when the conditions permit, they'll dig them back up and let the families properly dispose of those remains. Now, here's something I'd like more information on. California is donating 500 ventilators to the Strategic National Stockpile. Now, based on what little I know about this so far, I would much prefer that Governor Newsom loan 500 ventilators to Governor Cuomo to be dispersed in New York, where it appears the next 2 weeks are going to see critical overloads in the medical response. And maybe this is to earn brownie points with Trump and Jared for future benefits to California. I'm not going to second-guess our governor too much. But I like the World War II concept of lend-lease, that it remains the property of California and can be redeployed when and if we need it here. Linda Lewis also located a Financial Times article published on Friday, I believe, that parallels the reporting we've talked about, the thugs, the interception of German-ordered face masks in Bangkok. And those have never reached Berlin because they were essentially stolen by American operatives and shipped here to the United States. Yeah, America first. The latest numbers from Spain and Italy are somewhat encouraging. But we're also seeing, a flattening of the new cases and fatalities in New York City. And I'm a little wary of all this because, number one, on the graphs that I've seen of the growth, the spread of coronavirus cases and subsequent deaths, many of them have had little dips. And then it shot up even further. But at least temporarily, the good news in Spain is that last week, the average report was about 800, 830 fatalities. Well, in the last 24 hours, it was only 637, the lowest in Spain in 2 weeks. And similarly, in Italy, they had 832 daily deaths last week, and they said it was only 636 on, I believe that figure relates to Sunday. Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, is planning to call Trump and ask him to change the rules and allow coronavirus patients on the Navy hospital ship Comfort, which is anchored in New York Harbor. The original stipulation was to relieve medical facilities of non-COVID patients. But there are so few at this point that the latest report is that only 20 patients are on the Comfort. And we'll see exactly, you know, Trump loves to cut regulations. Let's see what he can do about helping his home city. And Jared did relent and ship 600,000 N95 masks to the city of New York. And Bill de Blasio is prostrate in his praise, because that's what you got to do. But they still need more ventilators, 1,500 to get through this week. And I don't even know if the 500 from California will be assigned to New York through the Jared Kushner. You know, it's ours. It's his. It's theirs. Not mine. Stockpile. You may have heard about the Detroit bus driver who put up a video complaint. It was about 2 weeks ago. He was on his route. Opened the door, a woman got on the bus, coughed several times without covering her mouth. And in his live stream statement, Jason Hargrove said, "That lets me know that some folks don't care. You all need to take this shit seriously. There's folks dying out there." And on Thursday, it was Jason Hargrove who died. Now, one of the other things I observed in Trump's behavior at the Saturday dance was he was asked a question about some glitches in one of the features of the CARES Act, that is, loans to small businesses that could be forgiven if they meet certain criteria, paying it to employees, covering the rent, that sort of thing. But multiple news accounts, including here in San Francisco, in the New York Times, discovered that banks are not even accepting applications from firms that don't currently do business with the bank. The stipulation is you have to have a loan with the bank and a checking account. And if you don't, the window is closed. And even a business, Melissa Perry, she has a New York business that employs six people, has for years had a business bank account and a $42,000 line of credit with the Bank of America. But she was denied because she didn't have a B of A credit card. Now, this is bullshit. And I did a brief interview with our local congressman, Jared Huffman, for a Spanish language program that we produce here. And I asked him about that. And he said flatly that was not the intention of the legislation and that he thinks that this is changing because they're shaming these bankers and that some of these revisions are already in the works. And I do, you know, have some sympathy for the banks because they were told on Thursday to start taking applications on Friday. But by inserting their own stipulations, I consider that to be an onerous act. For God's sake, it's not their money they're loaning. Sorry. Then we see that corporate lobbyists are trying to take advantage of the crisis to achieve objectives that were on their agendas before the crisis arose. So here in California, all the big internet companies, Google, Facebook, Twitter, they're trying to get the state of California to delay the implementation of the new privacy laws until 2021. They want to be able to buy and sell your data, give it to the federal government, whatever they want. And they want an entire extra year before the law goes into effect. You got Uber out there saying, come on, this AB5, the gig law that converts our serfs, the independent contractors who aren't independent contractors, into employees, we can't bear the burden. We collected billions and billions in our IPO, but we don't want to share that with the little people who drive our cars because, after all, they're just working for us a while until we can get the driverless cars out there on the streets. And Amazon, they want relaxation of the rules so that they can use drones to deliver packages. You can imagine there's a huge cost savings over human drivers, vehicles, and fuel. Ah, and then there are the vultures of Wall Street. They're not concerned about the death toll in New York City. No, they're gaming to get a piece of the action. And this comes in two ways. Apollo Global Management, a large private equity and financing firm, is pressing the government to expand the types of assets eligible for collateral in the Federal Reserve Lending Program. Now, this same company is in a separate article in the New York Times. Investors see opportunities in companies sent reeling. These are vultures, friends. And the same group, Apollo, Avenue, Fortress Investment Group, BlackRock, they are poised to pounce on companies that have too much debt and can't stay afloat, as most businesses shut down. Firm after firm has set up funds. And one of them bragged that after the Great Recession of 2008, we had some of our best returns coming out of the global financial crisis. That's the founder of Pennant Park, Art Penn. They got $3.5 billion in cash ready to buy up vulnerable companies. Interesting piece published today at Politico. Before Trump's inauguration, his team, the transition team, including some of the people who had been appointed, like Wilbur Ross, Secretary of Commerce, Rick Perry, who disappeared at the end of the year as Energy Secretary, they were forced to sit through a three-hour meeting where they were briefed by the Obama team about a live test, a live simulation that had been recently conducted. They were briefed on a pandemic that came from a novel influenza known as H9N2. They tell us the octogenarian Wilbur Ross slept through parts of the meeting, and that other people like, Mike Flynn, who was still on the job but had been outed that day for the allegations that he lied to the FBI about his phone call with the Russian ambassador or foreign secretary, foreign minister, I think he's called. But we know that the Obama team repeatedly offered transition support to the incoming Trump people, and most of it was rejected. They weren't interested in learning the ropes, in reading the latest reports, in finding out about the risks that they would have to deal with when they took office. At least 30 representatives of Trump's team were there, and they were assigned to seats next to their closest Obama administration counterpart. Oh, boy. And Trump blames Obama wherever he can. Oh, yeah, they didn't tell us about this. It's been reported that Trump himself was told by Obama himself that North Korea and a virus pandemic were the greatest risks he might face. Every day I stop for a minute to thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast, including Paul Karsh, Abby McMillan, Eugene Hetzel, and we got a nice big contribution from Dean Peters. I think I failed to thank you for that, Dean. That occurred in, it posted on March 23rd at PayPal. I appreciate that. You're welcome to take out a subscription. Go to peterbcollins.com/signup, and the details are all there. You can also use PayPal to send a one-time contribution of any amount. Link it to the email peter@peterbcollins.com. And I'm working on a plan where I'm going to suspend my appeals for new subscriptions and ask you to donate to the PBC Relief Fund. And I'm going to seed it with $1,200, the amount I've been promised from the federal government, just like you. I'll have the details in a few days when I pull it all together. Want to recommend that you see John Oliver's show, aired last night on HBO. He continues to produce programs from an undisclosed location with limited production values and no live audience. But he did a great job last night of exposing One America News, this far-right network with a White House reporter named Chanel Rione. You may have seen her ask these puffball questions of Trump, where he says, nice question, not so nasty like CNN fake news. Well, these are plants. And this woman, Rione, last week, attended a meeting that she wasn't even invited to, saying, well, she had special permission from the White House press secretary. And she stood up and asked a question where she basically smeared everybody else in the room, saying that they were feeding the American public Chinese communist talking points and questioning their loyalty. All right, I got a few things you should know that are in my stack here. A doctor who in Russia heads their Alliance for Doctors, Anastasia Vasilyevna, she was detained by authorities after she accused the Kremlin of low official numbers for coronavirus infections, referring to them as lies. Also, the New York Times, in a front pager on Sunday, disclosed that they took a look at the air traffic from China to the United States, starting in early January, and then the point where Trump claims he shut down travel from China. And at least 40,000 people were permitted to enter the United States after Trump says he had shut it down. And those 40,000 people report that they didn't even get the usual scrutiny from the customs officers as they deplaned, mostly at Los Angeles and San Francisco international airports. But Trump makes it seem like, oh, yeah, we buttoned that up. And I was the only one who wanted to do it. You know, he's a hero at all times. Over at the United Nations, the Security Council has not met recently. And the Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, is trying to convene the group to take action, unified global action, to manage the pandemic. But most members of the Security Council, led by the U.S., China, Russia, they're not interested. I mentioned on Friday that last Thursday, Trump tweeted what appears to be a pack of lies. He claimed he had talked to Crown Prince MBS in Saudi Arabia and to Putin earlier in the week, and that they had agreed to a truce in their oil war, which, as Scott Ritter recently explained, is really an attack on U.S. production and the costly fracking that produces very expensive oil. So Trump said on Thursday and tweeted it, he believed that Russia and the Saudis were near a deal to cut production. But it appears to have sparked even greater tensions between Russia and the kingdom. And that underscores that Trump was bullshitting. And Twitter, despite the fact that they banned Elon Musk from tweeting anything that could cause a shift in the stock in Tesla or his other companies, they don't impose that same ban on Trump when he does things that cause a rally in the market. And today, at least in the early trading on Wall Street, there was a big jump. Are they delighted at the increasing death count in New York? Or Trump's, what word can I use? His beautiful management of the crisis? I often comment on the quality of journalism from Britain's Guardian newspaper. And where I value their work is their reporting in the United States that our own mainstream media doesn't bother to engage in. But here is a stinker, real yellow journalism today from The Guardian. They are reporting that the Chemical Weapons Watchdog, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, OPCW, will be publishing a report this Wednesday repudiating the whistleblowers, the actual field inspectors who went to Douma, who went to Ghouta, and declared that the claims that Syria used chemical weapons that were dropped by bombs, including nerve agents, were false. Now, one of the wobbly things about this is the Assad government, in their barrel bombs, have used liquid chlorine. And that's kind of a wobbler as whether you determine that that is a chemical weapon or not. But the accusations have often included nerve agents, and the inspectors who went to the field, who blew the whistle when their reports were scrubbed at HQ, they've not only been silenced, but here is the outlandish claim from the OPCW. The supposed whistleblower controversy last year, which the organization comprehensively rejected with an official inquiry, even though the criticism was found to be baseless, it does not stop the conspiracy theorists. Yeah, that's how you dismiss and marginalize honest reports and those who take those jobs seriously. Bill McKibben has a piece that kind of balances the Guardian's bad coverage. It's an op-ed today about how Big Oil is using the coronavirus pandemic to push through the Keystone XL pipeline. I've linked to it, and I encourage you to read it. I've also linked to the latest reporting from Alan McLeod at Mint Press News, where he quotes widely a letter from the legitimate president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro. And it's an appeal to the citizens of the United States. From the beginning, he says, Trump downplayed and even denied it the same way he's done with climate change. Today, the crisis in the U.S. aggravates simply because, despite having the resources, he's not willing to transform the healthcare system to prioritize full care for the population instead of profit-based private medicine, insurance companies, and the pharmaceutical industry. That's a pretty cogent critique of the mess that we have as a healthcare system that is based on profit. And Maduro has mobilized his forces because he is a goddamn socialist. He has very few resources. I think there are like 18 ICUs in the entire country. Don't quote me on that, but that's what I recall reading. So his appeal continued. I wholeheartedly ask you not to allow your country to be dragged once again into another unending conflict, another Vietnam, another Iraq, but this time closer to home. We in Venezuela do not want an armed conflict in our region. We want brotherly relations of cooperation, exchange, and respect. And this is against the moves last week to move American gunboats off the shore of Venezuela, contending that they will be interdicting drugs. And I've repeatedly reported that the DEA, their own website, shows that there is very little traffic coming from Venezuela to the United States, particularly in cocaine. Okay, Mitch McConnell. He's got a protege, a guy he says he's known since high school, and this is the youngest and least qualified nominee to the federal court that we've seen, and that says a lot. He's a young white man, Justin Walker, and McConnell, who just 3 weeks ago flew back to Kentucky to be there for his installation as a district judge, is already appointing. He hasn't even presided over a case that we know of. Unqualified, says the Bar Association. And now McConnell is trying to, well, Trump has nominated him at McConnell's behest to serve on the critical D.C. Court of Appeals. Wow. And speaking of bad judicial behavior, the latest judge presiding over trials at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, Colonel W. Shane Cohen, has already announced that he is retiring. And this will require the insertion of a new judge who will take another 9 months to a year to get up to speed. And this delay in justice just proves what a kangaroo court operation it is. But add insult to the whole picture, because Colonel Cohen secretly allowed the CIA to set up its own monitoring channel in his courtroom. They already have a pipeline that allows them to black out or to mute any comments that they don't want people to hear, because the media sits in a glassed-in booth and can only hear the approved audio that's on a delay. Well, this second pipeline allows the Defense Department and others in the community that would be embarrassed by the torture programs to black things out, even things that are public knowledge. For example, on January 27th, a defense lawyer who was questioning the torture doctor, James Mitchell, he and his partner got $83 million to devise the enhanced interrogation. Well, he published a book in 2016, and one of the attorneys in the courtroom quoted from that book. And the CIA cut out a part where it described a police force of the CIA who was on site at the black sites where the torture was conducted. Yes, they are attempting to retroactively censor comments that are already public. And this is not the first time that kind of comic and sinister behavior has occurred. The FISA court, the super-secret star chamber, has ordered the FBI to report back in just a few weeks after the inspector general, who's likely to be bounced by Trump, revealed that in the review of 29 wiretap applications in terrorism and espionage investigations, they were all defective. And it relates to the underlying file, the Woods file, that is supposed to substantiate that every claim in the warrant request is accurate. So by June 15th, they have to the FBI is required to submit a sworn declaration, about their investigation into themselves. That's the only way the FBI ever submits to investigation. Sure, we'll look into that, and we'll let you know what we find. Finally today, many of you know about David Talbot, the brilliant author and former editor of Salon. Well, on Facebook yesterday, he linked to a blog post by a man named John Katz. This is not Jonathan Katz, the reporter who covered the disaster in Haiti that followed the disastrous earthquake more than 10 years ago. This John Katz says that he was a media critic, and he spent some time as a film producer. And so he's fascinated by the dueling daily briefings, Governor Cuomo in the morning and Donald Trump in the afternoon. And I think he makes some interesting points. He's not trying to promote Cuomo as the wunderkind who should be substituted in as the Democratic nominee. But I think he makes some good remarks about the way they're presenting themselves in media, and it does make Cuomo appear far superior to the bumbler in the White House. Thanks for listening all the way to the end of my daily news and comment podcast. You're free to share it all over the place. You'll find it on YouTube. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.